The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Monday, June the 23rd, 2025. And I want to welcome Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
I guess welcome me back, right?
Yes, welcome back.
And Chris Woodward. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
You were in the nation's capital last week.
Yes, Allison and yours truly, and that's my wife, and then Stephen and Beth McDowell, the Providence Foundation, and we hosted some of our fine listeners and supporters. We went to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, and then we went to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and saw the nation's capital. It was a great week, as we do this twice a year. We do it in June and September, and it was a wonderful time spent with some great folks who pray for us and believe in us and write us checks, and I thanked them, and we had a wonderful time. We absolutely did. Now, while we were there, of course, big news broke, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The U.S. military, under orders from President Trump, bombed three different nuclear sites in Iran, and that's primarily, we will talk about a few other things, but that has been the big news all weekend long. The president, I will say this, I don't always agree with everything President Trump does. I don't even agree with everything my wife does, okay?
Right, but you don't say that out loud. That was a mistake, what you just did right there. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes, that's right, because I said it. I can't deny it now, can I? But I'm just going to tell you, President Trump continues to surprise, even shock me, with his boldness, thinking outside the box. He basically told the world he's giving Iran 2 weeks to come to the negotiating table. And two or three days after he said that,
After that time was expired.
No, yeah, but before the time was expired.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he said 2 weeks. They got it. And so just to make sure nobody was looking, he says 2 weeks we're given, and then two or three days later, he gives the thumbs up, and the military performed just an amazing feat. By the way, we are going to have Frank Turek on in just a few minutes, who I think you said is a Navy aviator, to talk a little bit about talk about the mission. But, wow, a lot going on. A lot could still happen and probably will happen, but anyway, Chris.
Well, just to clarify, what I meant by that was that President Trump and his team had been in negotiations with the Iranian regime for several weeks.
Mm-hmm. That is also true, yes.
Prior to the two-week ultimatum.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I mean, just to kind of take everybody back to Saturday night, much of the United States of America found out after supper what had happened in Iran when we got news alerts or whatnot on our phone. And a lot of us were directed to a presidential address that was going to begin at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. And I have some of that audio here. Let's just begin with Trump at the beginning of the remarks, which also included behind President Trump at the podium was Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. But here is President Trump at the beginning of Saturday night's remarks, clip one.
A short time ago, the U.S. military carried out massive precision strikes on the three key nuclear facilities in the Iranian regime, Fordo, Natanz, and Esfahan. Everybody heard those names for years as they built this horribly destructive enterprise. Our objective was the destruction of Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity and a stop to the nuclear threat posed by the world's number one state sponsor of terror. Tonight, I can report to the world that the strikes were a spectacular military success. Iran's key nuclear enrichment facilities have been completely and totally obliterated. Iran, the bully of the Middle East, must now make peace. If they do not, future attacks will be far greater and a lot easier.
Now, since that speech, there have been news reports and even social media posts from Iranian officials saying, you know, they're not going to back down. I saw a story here as the show began this morning. President Trump is meeting with his national security team again today to talk about and perhaps prepare for any sort of response from Iran. Fox, meanwhile, had a story yesterday saying that Iranian officials were going to be talking with their Russian counterparts. And then there was a story from former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. Thank you.
Who? What now?
The former president of Russia said there are countries lining up to give Iran nuclear weapons again. So
what's
this
his
is
name?
Not over. Medvedev.
How you spell that?
Medvedev, I think.
Medvedev.
There you go.
Medvedev.
I just wanted to see y'all struggle with that.
I can do it when
I'm looking at it. No, that was just a game for me. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that on a serious.
That was just a game.
Yeah, yeah. So this fella who we've seen in the news for many years, is he Vladimir Putin's number two guy?
He was the president for a period of time when, like, Putin stepped away.
When
and
he
then,
pretended to step away.
And then Putin, Gloria, you know, he returns for his big return.
Yeah. So
he's like
I know who,
his advisors now.
Yeah. We've all seen him and heard him over the years. But for him to say that countries are lining up to give Iran a nuclear warhead?
Mm-hmm.
What is he talking about? I don't think that's true. Does anybody even believe that? I think he's just ticked at America.
I will say this. When Medvedev said that over the weekend, that was the scariest thing I heard all weekend, because Iran's making threats, and we're going to be talking about this. I mean, closing the Straits of Hormuz, and, you know, there's talk about perhaps sleeper cells in the United States, all those kind of things. There's a lot of dangerous things that could happen. But when Medvedev said that there were nations lining up to give nuclear warheads to Iran, that was very concerning to me. I did some reading on that afterwards. An article in Business Insider said that analysts were claiming that this is garbage, what Medvedev said, because
Russian disinformation.
It was, yes, that it was not really credible. And one of these individuals, Pavel Podvig, I can't spell that because I'm looking at it. He's a senior researcher in the United Nations Institute for Disarmament, researches weapons of mass destruction. He said it's impossible in practice because nuclear weapons are not like a bomb or just something you can carry in a suitcase. He says nuclear warheads come as an entire system with people who need to be trained to keep and service them safely, as well as maintenance facilities and equipment. He also said even tactical nukes, which are more portable and produce a smaller blast, need high-level storage. He said unless you create a nuclear program or almost a nuclear program in the country, there's no way to just give your nuclear weapons to them. So that helped me a little bit, because I was very worried that someone like North Korea or even China or Russia might hand off nuclear warheads to Iran that could be used in a variety of ways against Israel or against us. But at least from what some of these people are saying, there were others quoted.
But it sounded like almost a flippant remark from this guy who's the number two guy in Russia, that, you know, he was gleeful or something. Like, oh, well, never mind. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry.
We'll give them. We'll make sure they get
Iran a nuclear warhead so they can bomb America.
It would, as I thought about this over the weekend, I thought, like you said, how dangerous for the country who gives them the weapons. If they were to do that, I don't put anything past Mossad, the intelligence branch for Israel. If that were done to find out exactly who did
it. Sure they would.
And who had handed these over. And then if Iran uses those weapons and the people running the country, the mullahs, they're insane. They are eaten up with this apocalyptic religious belief. They're going to use those nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Then the country who gives them those weapons are responsible for the carnage.
Right. All right. Well, I want to take a look at the mission that took place. I've been reading a lot on this. It's fascinating, the mission that our military undertook to take out the nuclear facilities, nuclear weapon facilities there in Iran. And joining us to talk about it is our good friend, Dr. Frank Turek from Cross-Examined Ministries, and I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist radio show and podcast. How you doing, Frank?
I'm just swell. How's everybody there?
All right, brother. Hey, I wanted to ask you, you've mentioned it before. What is your military experience?
Well, I was in naval aviation, but my middle son was in Air Force aviation. In fact, he was a refueler. He used to fly KC-10s. Now, they've retired the KC-10s. Now they got the KC-135, and they're trying to bring the 46 on to refuel. I don't know which refuelers were involved bringing the B-2s across, but what we used to say about my son Spencer is that every day he would fly up to 30,000 feet, he would sit around and pass gas.
Oh, man.
Wow. That's
something guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Say. Hey, if I got paid to pass gas, I'd be a multimillionaire already.
Somebody just turned on their radio. They just turned on the radio.
That was the first thing they heard,
and there was no context at all. Frank, what can you tell us about the mission that was undertaken here? I mean, give us your thoughts on that.
Well, I think this has been planned not just during the Trump administration, but this mother of all weapons, this bunker buster bomb, we've had since Afghanistan. It was right after Afghanistan, I think we got that weapon. We didn't use it in any military way. We used it just in training. This is the first time it's ever been used in a military strike. But they've been training for this even prior to Trump. And I think that the Pentagon has known that at some point this might have needed to have happened. And so this has been going on for quite a while. Now, refueling is nothing new. In fact, if you've got to take any of these planes across the pond, as we say it, especially the fighters, they need to be refueled along the way quite a bit. This 37-hour round trip for the B-2, they say they were refueled like three times each way. So,
they left out of we had decoys here and
oh yeah,
they left out of Missouri, right?
They did. They went Missouri and they had two go west and the rest seven go east. And typically when you fly, you squawk codes so air traffic controllers and such can see you and other planes and that kind of thing. They apparently weren't squawking anything. They were totally almost radio silent the whole way.
How high up were they? Do you know?
I don't know how high the B-2s go. You know, our reconnaissance planes, like a U-2, can go up to 60,000, maybe even above that. But I don't know how high the U-2 are.
The reason I ask is, as I understand it, they were undetectable by radar.
Well, that's why. Yeah, that Batwing plane has about the radar, you know, the radar profile of a ketchup bottle. You know, you're not going to see it. Next generation fighters, the F-35s, they have very low radar profile too. So they're designed so the So the enemy can't see you. Also, what has been done, and I don't know if it was done on this flight, I haven't read anything about it, but in the Navy, we had planes that would jam enemy radar, it would create problems for enemy radar. I don't know if they did much of that on this. It didn't seem like they had any capacity after the Israelis went in there to even put up anti-aircraft fire. But of course, if you don't see anybody coming, there's no reason to put up anti-aircraft fire. So the Israelis paved the way. The United States just went in there and with precision and stealth, just did the job and then got out.
The B-2, I just looked it up, has a reported maximum altitude of 50,000 feet.
Yeah, I don't know if they could do that with an additional 60,000 pounds.
Well, that may be true. By the way, when I quoted this article from Business Insider talking about about whether or not you could just hand nuclear warheads off to Iran, Brent Creeley, our producer, has posted that article on our Facebook page. So you can check that out. There may be some difficulties with the paywall, but I think Brent's got that sorted out. So anyway, that's just a bit of additional information.
You know, I think since you mentioned this, Ed, and I did see that former Soviet president or Soviet Russian president, you know, say, oh, yeah, we're going to give them nuclear weapons. Don't you think that's just kind of bluster and a bargaining chip?
Yeah, I think Russia may have been a little bit embarrassed by what happened because they are allies with Iran. I know that Putin, this might have been I don't know if it was a U.S. reporter that asked why they didn't help Iran with some of this with Israel. And Putin said something about, well, there's a lot of Russian speakers now in Israel, so we were staying out of it. I don't know if they were just a little embarrassed since they were allies with Iran and they didn't seem to be able to do anything to stop us. Not that they would want to engage U.S. forces directly, but I think you're right. I think it is a little bit of bluster to try to take.
They're just jealous. They're just jealous of the American military. And so. He just wanted to get a dig in.
Yeah.
And the dig is countries are lining up in the queue, he said, to give Iran nuclear weapons, which that is not true. Right. But he just wanted to say he wanted to do something to scare Americans, you know.
Yeah.
Is Russia going to give Iran? And are they good about that? Are they happy about that? What if Iran gets mad at Russia and turns it around on them?
Right.
So I want to ask you another thing. By the way, Chris, welcome to the show.
No, yeah.
Chris Woodward.
I'm in the queue waiting on a question.
You're right. Hey, that's good.
Thank you.
Chris Woodward, Ed Vitagliano, Tim Wildman, and joining us from the great state of North Carolina is our good friend Frank Turek. I want to ask you about turn it to the theology of the mullahs in Iran. So you have a something called Ayatollah Khomeini. And Khomeini must be something like pharaohs or czars, or so. It must be a word that they use to describe the supreme leader of the Islamic. I don't know what would you call it? Movement over there? Is that what it is?
I think, Tim, that it's a slightly different spelling from.
It is. It's Khomeini.
Yeah, it's a different spelling.
I never
it sounds
spelled
the same,
it.
But it's a different spelling. It's probably just his name, but. Yeah. You know, as you know, and very few people talk about this in the media, but this is basic jihad that the Shias like to engage in. Of course, also the Wahhabi Sunnis do as well. This goes all the way back to Muhammad. I mean, if you look at 1,400 years of history, jihad is a physical struggle, not an internal, you know, I'm trying to overcome sin kind of thing, or I'm trying to overcome some internal problem. Violence has been part of global Islam for 1,400 years. And this is not to say, obviously, that every Muslim agrees with this. Thankfully, only a minority agree with it. But that's a very vocal and violent minority. And it tends to, when it takes over a country, freedoms go away, as you see there in Iran. and all sorts of trouble occurs. They have been the biggest sponsor of global terrorism ever since 1979 when the Shah was kicked out and Ayatollah Khomeini took over. In fact, 19 years ago this month, I actually went to Tehran. We went on a Noah's Ark expedition. Long story, don't have to tell you all the details, but we went over there, and we happened to be over there during the 17th anniversary of Khomeini's death. And the streets of Tehran were just lined with all this propaganda, all these flags and pictures of Khomeini and everything. And on the side of buildings, they had one building had an American flag, and the stars were skulls, and the stripes were unfurling as bombs. And, you know, down with America. We went to the old embassy, where in 1979 the Iranians stormed our embassy and took a number of hostages for 444 days, you remember, and when right. Reagan was sworn in, they let him go. And on the side of the embassy, there was this big mural. It was the Statue of Liberty, but the face of the Statue of Liberty was a skeleton. And underneath it said, "We will make America face a severe defeat." This was 19 years ago in Tehran, and I don't think much has changed since then.
Let me ask you this. What is the, you know, do you understand the apocalyptic, and I'm not talking about in the Christian view of that, I'm talking about the...
like the 12th Imam and
yes,
all that.
You mentioned the Shia, which is a branch. There's the Sunni and the Shia. That's the two main branches of our two main divisions, I guess, in Islam. The Iranians, Persians, they subscribe to the Shia. Shia denomination, for lack of a better word. So what is it that they believe, these mullahs, these imams... about the 12th Imam and the ushering in the end of the world, that kind of thing? What would you know about that?
I am not an expert in that regard.
Make it up, because we got 5 more minutes here.
It seems to me, although that is encouraging them toward violence, even if they didn't believe that, that's been going on for 1,400 years.
Gotcha.
I looked something up about this, if you guys want me to...
Chime
see
in.
What you get on it.
Chime in, Ed.
Because if you plug it into AI, we know it's true.
So Muhammad al-Mahdi, he was called the Mahdi, is considered the 12th and last imam in 12er Shia Islam. He was born in 868 A.D., mm-hmm. and he says to have been taken into a place of like spiritual hiddenness. Mm-hmm. And according to Shia tradition, the Mahdi will reappear at the end of time to establish peace and justice and the victory of Islam over all her enemies. And so my understanding is that the mullahs who run Iran believe that if they can trigger a worldwide war, but especially a war against Israel, that will bring the Mahdi out of hiding to give victory to Islam.
But isn't it interesting, Ed, that when you read the Quran, you know who's going to be the ultimate judge according to them? Jesus.
Really?
Oh yeah.
He's one of the prophets.
They believe Jesus was virgin born. They believe Jesus was sinless, but they just don't believe he's God.
They don't believe
he died and rose again either. They think he was taken straight to heaven because God would never kill a prophet. I guess they haven't read the whole Testament very much. Mm-hmm. That's in Surah 4, verse 157. And the problem for them is that they have a dilemma. And maybe we can pick this up after the break if I hear the music coming up. But
you do.
All right.
Do you hear the music coming up?
I hear the music coming up.
That means
we'll pick this up after the break.
That means shut up.
Yeah.
That's our shut up music.
That's right.
It is playing.
All right. We'll be back, Chris, Ed, and yours truly, Tim, and Dr.
We'll,
Frank.
We'll let Chris talk.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
I'm in the queue.
Frank Turk with us. We're talking about several things here. The mission that took place, the very highly successful U.S. military mission, which once again showed the capabilities of our unmatched military. And we'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence, often alone. Preborn network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now lie lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother, too. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250, baby. Or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Ed and Chris, and Frank Turek is joining us from North Carolina. We've been talking about, you know, the big story for the last few days, and that is the United States bombing with the bunker busters, the nuclear facilities there in Iran, meant to they were there to build weapons, nuclear weapons to be used, and on Israel, on the U.S., on whoever. I guess Iran would want to do that too. But President Donald Trump said we're going to destroy those facilities, and he sent our bombers around the world to do so on a mission that was just spectacular. The more I read about it, and it's just, I don't think any other military in the world would be capable. They don't have the weapons, mm-hmm. and wouldn't be capable of doing what our
It was just a reminder to me. Sometimes we forget how powerful the U.S. military is and how professional they are.
And how it can reach around the world.
It's extraordinary. I mean, yeah. We got Frank on here. Yeah. I don't want to take time away from him.
I wanted to ask you, Frank, to comment on this. A really volatile and scary part, and I do use that word. I have faith in God. We all have faith in God here, too. But it is, on a human level, it is scary what I'm about to mention. With most countries, most every country in the world, you can negotiate, you can deal with them, you can talk to them on a mutual understanding of reality, okay? That's the way I would put it. The Russians, the Chinese, whoever it may be. With the imams, the Khomeini, the mullahs in Iran, the religious fanatics, the Islamic religious fanatics that control the country, at least now, they don't they don't deal in the same world that normal political figures do. They're coming at it from a theological perspective, and so they don't have consideration necessarily for, this is why they, when they send weapons to bomb Israel, they don't care who it hits.
Right.
Israel and the United States are trying to avoid civilian casualties. Iran is trying to inflict them.
Yes, they want to trigger that final war.
Yeah, so they don't care about. So they hate Jews, they hate Christians, they hate Americans. So, what about that aspect of it, Frank? The religious fanaticism of the leaders in trying to deal with them.
Well, that's especially true when their own Quran says they can lie to the infidel, and who's the infidel? Anybody
right.
that's not their brand of Islam, even.
Right, right.
So, yeah, how do you negotiate with something like that? Now, of course, Donald Trump thinks he can negotiate anything with anyone, And if it was possible to negotiate and hold them to it, okay, that would be better than, you know, bombing them. But they didn't even want to come to the table. They wouldn't even talk directly. They were trying to go through intermediaries. Mm-hmm. So he had really no choice at this point. This was the least worst choice. Let's just put it that way.
You mean for Trump?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What else is he going to do? He's not going to allow them to get a nuclear weapon. That's off the table. Especially someone who has this worldview that they think they're going to bring the end times in, and they're also going to automatically go to heaven by committing jihad if they die in it. That's the way they can. In fact, in Islam, you can't. The only way you can be sure you're going to make it to paradise, as they call it, is to die in jihad. Otherwise, your good deeds have to outweigh your bad, and Allah, it's up to Allah whether that happens or not.
Well, I told him he needs to run outside and take one for the team then, doesn't he? If he really believes that?
Well, yeah, whether or not they really believe it is another question, but how do you negotiate with people that you know have a premise that you're the infidel, they can lie to you, they want you dead, they want global Islam? That's been going on for 1,400 years. This is nothing new.
All right, Chris, you got a question?
I do have a question. Frank, you travel around the country and you speak at many college campuses. They're obviously out for summer. But I'm curious, have you ever been confronted with a lot of questions about like Genesis 12:3 and whether or not Christians should side with Israel, things like that?
I have not. I've seen several people talking about it recently. And how about just for the sake of argument, we don't even look at the Bible in this situation. Is there any doubt as to who the good guys are and the bad guys are? Really?
Right.
There's no doubt.
No.
Okay. Global terrorism has been sponsored by Iran since 1979. Iran is trying to prevent... Israel's trying to prevent them from nuking them. I mean,
yes.
They've said over and over again, we want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Now, here's an instance where maybe having the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque right there in Jerusalem might be a good thing. If you nuke Israel, you're going to wipe that stuff out,
right,
too.
Right.
By the way, Jordan's not going to be real happy. Neither's Lebanon.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, Egypt's not going to be happy about that.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Syria.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, too, when you look at the surrounding countries around Israel, I think, if I read correctly, that the surrounding countries have 177 times the land mass of Israel and 24 times the population, and they need a Palestinian state?
Right, right.
Yeah. What? You know what the Palestinian state is? It's Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. Jordan does not want these people because they're jihadists.
That is absolutely true.
And why can't they take Israel out? Why can a group of 10 million people, 20% of whom are Arabs, by the way, in Israel? Do you know there is a Muslim Arab on the Israeli Supreme Court? Arabs can vote in Israel.
Right.
They're citizens, okay?
Yeah.
How can this small group of people hold off enemies all around them and dominate them? Why is that?
Because God's on their side.
And I hear people saying, well, you know, we can't support Israel because, you know, they're apostate, they're not believers. How many kings of Israel were believers?
Yeah, that doesn't change the fact that they're God's chosen people.
Right.
All of the kings of Israel were bad. A few of the kings of Judah were good. The rest were bad. Did God ever say, he did judge them, but did he ever say, well, you know, don't support them? Never said that. So,
Chris, did you have another question for?
No.
Okay. Brother Frank, we shall let you go now. Get back to what you were doing. I'm sure very important work there around the Turek household.
Well, let's keep praying for everybody. I've been praying for the people of Iran.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I want to see them
free. Because everyone's made the image of God. We don't want people to die unnecessarily.
No.
But the purpose of government is to protect innocent people from evil, and that's what Donald Trump is trying to do.
Yeah. Amen. All right. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it, my friend.
All right. God bless you all.
All right. You too. Bye. Dr. Frank Turek. I said God is on their side. I didn't mean to sound flippant. I meant that. That's a long theological discussion that would take us days, which my knowledge would not hold up to, But I would just say this. It's inexplicable to me what Frank was saying. Outside of God and the story of the Bible and the Jews being God's chosen people, that Israel would even be surviving today. Much less, as he said, carrying out missions like they did inside the Mossad, inside Iran.
Yes.
It's just miraculous. That's my belief. Go ahead.
Yeah, and listen, I know that there are some different theological perspectives amongst our listeners in terms of the end times and in terms of Israel. I understand that. And to your point, we're not trying to get into a big theological discussion. My particular view is that, yes, Israel is, the people of Israel are, the nation of Israel are primarily non-Christian. Okay. It is true that in the first century, the nation of Israel was clearly judged by God for crucifying the Messiah. Matthew 23, other places, the prediction of the destruction of the temple by Jesus. Okay. Yes, there are promises that were given to Israel that seem to have incorporated God's New Testament movement in terms of the church. But it seems clear to me also that Romans 11 states emphatically, the Apostle Paul says, that God is still going to work in the lives of the Jewish people and the nation of Israel, so that when it was reconstituted as a nation in 1948, almost 2,000 years after it had been annihilated by the Romans, that's extraordinary. It is an extraordinary occurrence when Paul in Romans 11 is talking about the nation of Israel, and then the nation of Israel historically ends, and for almost 2,000 years, the church is going, well, how in the world does Romans 11 get fulfilled? There is no nation of Israel. And then in 1948, the nation is reconstituted in almost miraculous fashion. They stave off, without an army, they stave off an immediate attack by the nations around them,
right,
in 1948. Listen, I don't know how you can deny the fact that God still has his hand on the Jewish people and the reconstituted nation of Israel. So I respect people who disagree with what I just laid out biblically, but that's my view. Yeah. And AFA does not have a theological view,
right,
on the end times. There are people who have all kinds of views here inside the ministry. Our mission and our vision is cultural transformation. You want to find out about what your church teaches? Ask your pastor.
Yeah. Amen. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I'm Tim with Ed and Chris, and I would just say, if you want to download our podcast, you can do that here or any of our shows here on American Family Radio. Just go to AFR.net, click on podcast, and click on the banner with Today's Issues or any of the other shows, and you can listen on demand anytime you want to the program here.
Hey, by the way, let me just toss in one other thing. Folks, remember that there are a lot of Christians in the Middle East and in Iran,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they sometimes suffer under persecution, but these are people who love Jesus just as much as people in America do, and so be praying for them as well as a distinct group. Those are your brothers and sisters over there, always in very difficult
situations. I
want
to ask you one other question, and then Chris, I want to play some of these clips. Okay. We got some great clips, audio clips from over the weekend, and this may not be, we've talked about this issue before, but it relates to the spiritual nature of this particular conflict between Iran and Israel, okay? And I know I've studied history, you've studied history. Typically, wars are fought over land. Not always, but over the course of history, people have warred over land, right? That's what's going on in Ukraine, with Ukraine and Russian war right now. It's over land, right? Control of land. So that's a primary reason for warfare in the course of human history. Now, with Iran and Israel, it's a weird conflict. And I say weird or strange or unusual, out of the ordinary, however you want to phrase it. Iran has no border with Israel. They're like 1,500 miles apart or something like that. The Iranians are Persians. The Israelis, you know, Jewish, and they're surrounded by Arabs. So the Hamas and Hezbollah, the two terrorist organizations, one in Gaza, one in Syria, that have been just harassing and targeting Israel for a long time, they have no kinship with the Iranians, you know, in Persia. So why is Iran and their mullahs, and I mentioned spiritual, I think we're going to get to that in just a minute, their mullahs, their religious leaders in Iran, why are they so obsessed with a tiny little country 1,500 miles away, which has nothing to offer them? I mean, there's no, you're not going to go into Israel and get a bunch of, you know, natural resources. You know, so what drives the obsession that the Iranians have had since 1979 with the destruction of the nation of Israel? Why don't they target Bolivia?
Yeah.
Why don't they target the Congo? I mean, what is it about Israel? It isn't even on their border, near their border, that they just can't control.
Well,
can't stand.
I'm not an expert on this, but I have written some articles and done some research on this. My understanding is that theologically, Islam teaches this, that there are two realms on the face of the planet. There is Dar al-Islam, which means the house of Islam, and there is Dal al-Harb, H-A-R-B, which is the house of war. And the house of war are lands that are not subjugated to Islam. Dar al-Islam is the house of Islam. Those are countries that have been subjugated to Islam. And the belief theologically is that once a land has been subjected to Islam, it belongs to Islam forever. Mm. And so when Israel was granted land in the Muslim theological mind in the house of Islam, that was an abomination. And the Jews cannot control that land because it belongs to Islam and does forever. So that's why you have those who believe in real Islam, okay, what we call the radicals. They may very well just be the ones who actually believe Islam, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Iranian Shia Muslims.
The bin Laden types.
The bin Laden types. Mm-hmm. They have to obliterate the Jews and end the nation of Islam, or Allah will be angry with them.
Yeah.
And this, in part, is why this is why no one wants, Frank Turek just said, nobody wants these radicals in Jordan or Saudi Arabia, because they believe Saudi Arabia and Jordan are compromised because they're living the good life and they won't eliminate Israel and they won't go to war with the West, which is their Islamic responsibility. And that's why they don't want, that's why Egypt kicked the Muslim Brotherhood out of Egypt and they, you know, moved over to Gaza. So the reason why Iran hates Israel and hates America for protecting Israel is because we stand behind Israel and help prevent the Muslims from taking that land over again.
I'm going to go with demonic as the answer. It's a demonic power feeding off the hatred that this people group has for another one. I mean, we get the God of the Bible from the Jews. Jesus himself said salvation is from the Jews. They hate Israel. They hate America because they are demonic.
That's why we're called the great Satan and Israel's the little Satan.
That is exactly why.
But what you've just described at least would explain in some way the way these people think. By these people, I mean the Iranian religious leaders like Khomeini. They think that the Jews, what they call the Zionists, or have a have land that belongs to the Muslims, mm-hmm. even though it's a Shia Sunni division too. They can't stand each other. A lot of them talking about that division in Islam, but still their common enemy are the Jews and Israel. And you know what? Israel has put up with a lot over the years. And the Hezbollah, the Hamas, they've been getting their financial support from Iran. Mm-hmm. And so if you knew that somebody was funding your terrorist organizations that were constantly attacking your country, it's kind of surprising to me that Israel's not attacked earlier against Iran. But all right, you got some clips to play for us?
Well, we do.
Yeah.
Related to this, because one of the things people are panicking about is, what is this going to do to my gas prices? That's a question many Americans are asking today. I've already seen Fox cover this.
Are they panicking about it?
Well, there are some people that are, I think, feeding panic.
Right.
You know, there are some news outlets that just want to do a segment on it, but when you spend hours and you keep going back to it, I think people start to panic.
Right.
And then they go to the gas station, and then they're buying out the gas and whatever else. Certainly, yeah. Diesel customers should be very concerned about this. But, you know, related to this, over the weekend, it was announced that Iran wanted the Strait of Hormuz to be shut down, therefore cutting, impacting oil transportation. Some people, though, that are not scared about it include Ben Shapiro, who did make these comments over the weekend, clip 7.
Approximately 20 million barrels of oil per day, about 20% of global consumption, pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Of the oil that transits Hormuz, 70 to 82% of all of it is destined for Asian markets. China is the single largest recipient. China, along with India, Japan, and South Korea, accounted for 67% of all crude oil and condensate flows through the strait in 2022 and the first half of 2023. So China bleeds first. Analysts say if this is what happens, then actually the people hit hardest are, wait for it, the Chinese. So that seems like a really stupid strategic move. How about the United States? Well, the United States imports about 0.7 million barrels of oil per day of crude oil and condensate from Persian Gulf countries through the Strait of Hormuz as of 2022. That accounts for 3% of total U.S. petroleum liquids consumption. Not 70 to 82%, 3%. So, again, could that be a long-term problem in the same way that it's kind of a problem that the Houthis have shut down the Red Sea? Sure, that could be a problem. Also, it could give Israel an excuse to just sink the Iranian Navy.
I will tell you this. If you are concerned about gas prices today, you should be less concerned than... You should be less concerned today with Donald Trump in charge of oil and gas policy than, God forbid, Kamala Harris. Because Kamala's answer to this would have been more solar powers, solar panels and windmills and all these other novelties that aren't
going to Well, this was the one of the reasons that President Trump won the election is that I think what factored in was leadership, especially on the world stage. And President Trump had 4 years of experience in that. We got to see what he did.
Yeah, I mean, gas was dirt cheap.
Yeah, well, but Americans, I think, trusted President Trump. They obviously more than then Vice President Harris to handle big situations like we're in right now. Do you have the clip where President Trump is saying talking about loving God?
Yes, we do.
What are we? So this was also a part of the speech Saturday night?
This is how he ended it after he talked about what we had done, and it was very successful. And then he mentioned this, clip 15.
And I want to just thank everybody, and in particular, God. I want to just say we love you, God, and we love our great military. Protect them. God bless the Middle East. God bless Israel. And God bless America. Thank you very much. Thank you.
It was a very brief speech, but that was kind of a mic drop moment there at the very end.
It was a brief speech, and then he referred to the press conference the next day, which would have been yesterday, by Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth and the General Raising Cane.
Raising Cane. We're all going to hear. Remember, it was Storm and Norman in the first Gulf War. Norman
what do you think about Trump saying, "We love you, God," there?
I've never heard any president say something that seemed so personal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard lots of presidents say, you know, we thank God. We, you know,
God bless America.
God bless America. that this sounded like something right from his heart.
I agree.
You know, I've never heard a president do that.
I don't think President Trump would ever tear up.
Right.
Okay, but because he's too much of an alpha male.
Yes. Right.
Well, I don't know if he's too much of an alpha male. That's not for me to judge. I guess he's an alpha male.
Yeah.
Okay. But
he
sounded like he was about to tear up right there almost.
Yeah. It sounded genuine.
Yes, that's what I mean.
And I like Tim saying, I can't read his heart, but it sounded genuine. And we can't forget, he credits God
yes.
for saving his life
yes.
on that assassination attempt. Now, I don't know who he thinks God is. I've heard some people say he is a Christian. I can't, from this distance, there's no way I can tell. But if he's not already a Christian, God is working in his life. That sounded like a genuine, we love you, God.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounded like he was almost going to choke up.
Yeah.
That's what I don't think that was in the speech at the end.
Yeah.
I think that was straight from his heart.
Yeah.
What I'm saying. I don't know that. I'm just guessing by the way he delivered it, because he had already kind of finished his official remarks.
Yeah.
And as President Trump is prone to do, he's going to inject his own.
Yes, right.
His own. He's got speech writers, and then he's got his own commentary.
Yes.
All right, and they're often mingled. All right, we're going to take a short time out right here. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
We'll be back with Steve Paisley Jordahl in just a few minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.